Welcome to What's Eric Eating, Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. This is the show where we talk about some news in the world of restaurants as well as our meal at a new restaurant you might like to try. To do that, I am joined by my co-host this week. She is an expert on food, wine, and good times. Felice Sloan, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Hey, to you. I don't know. I'm like in a mood today, you know? Like, I'm like happy. It's like a lot of food, good vibes going on in the city. So, yeah, it's all good.
Well, good. I'm glad you're here. There's a lot to talk about. Let us dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one, the team behind Bluedorn, Navy Blue, and Bar Bluedorn, that is to say Aaron Bluedorn and Sharif Mboge, are going to open Per Seyd at the Hotel St. Augustine. This is the new boutique hotel that is opening near the Minot Collection in Montrose. It comes from Bunkhouse, which is the Austin-based hotel group behind like the Hotel St. Cecilia in Austin, the Hotel Havana in San Antonio. They've got the Carpenter Hotel in Austin. They've got a whole bunch of properties. It's a big deal, this hotel. And now it's got a big deal restaurant to go with it. Felice, I talked to Aaron a little bit about this. He said it's going to be a bistro, kind of like in the places he's eaten in Paris and Lyon. Of course, it's going to be open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner to serve hotel guests. I say all that to say to you, what do you think about this union of Bunkhouse and Bluedorn?
Well, Eric, I've already picked out my bougiest outfit. And I looked through my closet and said, be gone. All these outfits are not fitting. I need a new outfit. I feel like I need a new wardrobe for the whole event. I am way, way over the top excited. Now, I'm as excited about the restaurant and the hotel, probably as excited as, I know how excited you get to say Aaron and Sharif's name. Like, when you say it, it brings so much joy saying their whole name. Like, it just rolls off your tongue in such like a bougie way. So yeah, I'm just as excited as that. Say it again, Eric, just say it again for the people and they'll see what I'm talking about. Say it again, Eric, go ahead.
Aaron Bluedorn and Sharif Mboge.
Yep. You took a little of your little stank off of it. Yeah, but anyway, I'm very excited about this union. I think it is like, it's the direction that Houston is going with, like all of the buzz around Houston, and Austin knows it. You know, Austin knows it. They should have been here before they went to San Antonio, but we ain't gonna talk about that. They're coming now, and you know, the hotel group's coming here now, and I think it's very smart. I think it's smart. I'm very excited.
Yeah, I think if you're opening your first hotel in Houston and you want to say to Houstonians, we see you, we appreciate you, we respect you, you had to get a really big name to operate the restaurant at the hotel. And frankly, there just really aren't very many names that are bigger than Aaron Bluedorn's, especially right now. So it gives the whole project a little more credibility, and it might create that rarest of all beans in Houston, which is to say a hotel restaurant that Houstonians actually want to dine at.
And then too, it's a smart move because that's a lane that he plays in, right? Because even if you think of big names, he's a big name and it's a lane he plays in. So if I think about who else would he have gotten at that level that understands where, you know, what it looks like, right?
Well, and I asked Aaron about that. I was like, you know, do you know about operating in a hotel? And he said, well, yeah, because Cafe Baloo, where he worked in New York for 10 years, is or was at the time in the Hotel Surrey. So he knows this world very well.
Ding, ding, ding. Right.
Right. Yeah. And so he's maybe better equipped than just about anybody else to make this happen.
Right. So it wasn't by like the hotel group, the hospitality group. They did not know that, right? They did the research. They knew that. So smart move, smart business move.
No, absolutely. And then the only other point I just wanted to sort of bring up with you is that this will be the Blue Dorn team's fourth restaurant opening since 2020. You know, they already opened Bar Blue Dorn last month. It's been open for about a month now. Do you have any concerns that they're spreading themselves too thin?
Not at all. I think they're going at the right pace.
No, I think Aaron and Sharif have built kind of the Alabama of Houston hospitality groups, where they've just accumulated so much talent that they don't so much recruit as they do reload, right? They have all these cooks and front of house people that have been with them now for 3 and 4 years, and so they see so much potential in all these people. And we saw that with Ali Pena, who was the sous chef at Navy Blue. You know, she started as a line cook at Blue Dorn. She moved over to Navy Blue, helped open that. And then when it was time to open Bar Blue Dorn, and they're like, all right, here's your shot. You know, you can be the executive chef. So I think, I don't know who in the Blue Dorn, you know, who the sous chef or line cook or whatever is that's in the on the Blue Dorn team, but they have someone in mind to run this restaurant. And so yeah, no, I don't worry about it either, but I figured we should at least address it.
What they said, stay tuned, stay tuned, watch what's next, right?
Yeah, you know, yeah, no, they, I, right. I don't know who's going to be leading the kitchen at this place, but I promise you, Aaron and Sharif do, and we'll find out, and it'll go very smoothly.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to topic number two. Gold Tooth Tony's, the Detroit style pizzeria in the Heights from Chef Anthony Callio, is opening a second location in the Bel Air Triangle. They have claimed a former Pink's Pizza for a new location that will open later this summer. Felice, let me just ask you, have you been to Gold Tooth Tony's? Have you had the pizza? What do you think?
So listen, I went to get my own pizza because me and pizza are. But I went to go get my own pizza. The line was out the door, right? I said absolutely not because me and pizza, this is not what we're doing. And then one of my friends, I told them about it. They ordered lasagna. I went over. They ordered lasagna, and then they had ordered pepperoni pizza. So, and I know Anthony, so I did get to try the pizza. And it was Anthony. It was great. It was delicious. And I kind of at that point I wish I had waited because I wouldn't have just gotten. I go, all you got was pepperoni pizza. I was kind of bummed out because I was like, it was very good, but I was like, I mean, it's Anthony. You got only pepperoni pizza.
Right, and he makes all these cool pizzas. So getting pepperoni, I mean, if it's your first
Right.
time, I always like pepperoni because it kind of sets a baseline. It kind of tells you what you can expect.
Well, I guess that was her thinking. Like, I've never been there. I'm like, ah, but I was so irritated because, I wanted to, I was like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, we should say, this has been a very successful endeavor for Anthony and his business partner. That they opened this place in the Heights. They were completely overwhelmed almost from jump, and over time they have learned to manage the demand. So now they're open for lunch and dinner again. And I talked to Anthony, and he said, "Look, I've been working the counter, and I've been talking to people, and I've been looking at our sales, and he's tweaking the menu. So I hope you didn't like that lasagna too much, because it's coming off the menu because it doesn't." It's like too much work. It doesn't kind of justify its
Oh,
place on the menu. And then
got
some of
it.
the weird stuff,
It
like
was
there's
good
a,
too, but I get it though. I get it. That makes sense. Yeah.
he doesn't serve bad food. Like Anthony's food is always delicious.
Right,
But
right.
there's a couple of kind of weird pizzas on there. Like there's one with, you know, venison sausage and cherries. It goes back to the Pie Pizza days. That stuff is coming off the menu. When Gold Tooth Tony's opened, they didn't have peppers or mushrooms available as toppings. So now they do. So now you can get like a real supreme. So he's been tweaking, and all kind of in the goal of opening a whole bunch of these. And
No,
Bel
that
Air is
makes sense.
first. Yeah. And so the only thing that kind of bums me out about the Bel Air location is they're not going to have the wings. And I really like the wings, but they are going to have more sandwiches, and they're going to add some salads, which they don't do in the Heights. So the idea is that all those like office workers, like along kind of the gallery area around 610, like, you know, Anthony's thinking like maybe they'll want pizza and salad for lunch, and if he has
Yeah.
both, he can sell that to them. So
I'm
that's how
excited
that
about the
came
Bel Air
together.
location. I'm excited about the
Yeah,
Bel Air
say a little
location.
more about
Yeah.
why you're excited for the Bel Air location, because I am too.
Yeah, I'm excited because that's you just talked about it, like lunch spots and I'm an esthetician, so in the daytime I'm always looking for, and here lately I've gotten a couple of new lunch spots, but because there's not a lot of lunch spots, they're always packed, right? Like, because when you get something new, then we packed out. So there's not a lot of lunch spots, in that area that are really good. So I'm excited about that, proximity to lunch spots, what you were just saying. So that's going to be good for him and that area.
Right. And then the other thing is, I have a whole bunch of friends that live kind of in that Bel Air, Meyerland, even kind of down to Westbury. And there's just not a lot of non-chain pizza choices, right?
And
There's
that
not a lot
part
of
too, yep.
locally owned pizza in that part of Houston. So, and no one that I'm aware of in that area that's doing Detroit. So if you, I think this is going to be huge. All those families with kids, this is your new dinner option. And I just think it's going to be, I think it's going to go very well for Anthony and for Gold Tooth Tony's. All right, let's move on to topic number three. Prego, the Rice Village Italian restaurant staple, is going to close at the end of May. Initially, several months ago, they announced that they were going to move to a new location within Rice Village. Those plans have changed, and instead, the restaurant will close. Felisa, I have a big picture question for you, but just before we do that, how about, do you have any memories of going to Prego? Do you like Prego, or are you going to miss Prego?
I remember we talked about it before. I was happy that they were able, thinking that they were able to move, I'm always sad to see a staple like Prego close, but as I admitted, it's been so long, since I've gone. I thought, okay, well, I was gonna right that wrong and go. So I'm sad that they're closing. And I do have some big picture thoughts on that. How do you feel? I know you're gutted. I know you're gutted. You kind of had talked about it when they were
Well,
going to
yeah, you know
move,
what's
and then you talked about it in your when you le recently, so.
right. I mean, what's so funny about this for me is that Prego, like, I like Prego. I've got no I've enjoyed my meals at Prego, and but it's always been a place that other members of my family really, really like. So
Right.
they're more devastated than I am, right? This is a blow for them. You know me. I'll keep going to Giacomo's and Mimmo and Polly's and all the other, Italian restaurants that I love. But this has been such a staple in the neighborhood, for such a long time. So, it's definitely a loss. The feedback that I got, after this article published from several people is that, this is another sign that, these changes that Rice has been making to Rice Village to bring in more of these national chains. They've got 60 Vines and Hop Dottie and Shake Shack and Van Leeuwen and Mendocino Farms. It's losing its character. The area is losing its character. It used to have more kind of quirky local options, and they're going away. So I wondered what your take was on that.
You can take that angle because it's easy to put it on Rice Village, right? Rice B Village has to keep those. It's an area. It's a business development. They have to keep that area populated with businesses. So if the local businesses are not going to be around and they're going to be going out of business, and someone wants to come in, what are they supposed to do? So take them out of the scenario. Then I'm looking at the local businesses. You have to evolve and stay relevant. And that's one of the things that I see a lot when I go to, if in the last 10 years, if I went, or 5 years or 3 years, some of those, but I'll take 5 years, some of those businesses, when I went into them that are not there, I said, this is great. If they don't get it together, this looks like when I came in here 5 years ago. At 5 years, they have not evolved, they have not changed, they have not gotten with the time. When you talk to them about They're like, oh, we're not doing that. Oh, we're not on the internet. Oh, we're not. What? It's not a flex that you're not doing it. You're not going to be around. Like, that's not how people are doing business anymore. You're not growing with your customers. Your customers are aging. They've aged out. They're dying. I'm not being raw. I mean, I'm not being raw. That's facts, right? Like, and if they're not like dying and the next generation of their kids and their kids' kids are not your customers, where are your customers? Like, you have to think about things like that. And if you're not getting new customers coming in the door or generational customers, hello, Prego. You know, I don't know if that's what happened to them, but I'm just saying those are things that you have to think about when you've been around. And I'm not saying it as a restaurant, it's like being aggressive and changing the menu every week, because there's restaurants we know that are still serving the same things, but you have to find a way to evolve and still be relevant. And I know for a fact some of those Rice Village places were dinosaurs, just aesthetically. And it wasn't aesthetically like in a way that was like pleasing. It looked like it was old and outdated, and you just didn't want to go in there. So you have to take those things into account as well. It can't just all be on Rice Village is bringing these outsiders in and pushing the locals out, because that ain't it. It could be part of it. You know, I'm not in those meetings, but we have to look at it from both sides.
Yeah, no, and I reached out to Rice Village for sort of their perspective on this, and they said, look, we built that, that building dates back to the 50s, right, that Prego is in. So it's not a good use of that real estate anymore. That real estate is more valuable. So they have plans to redevelop that property, which is what prompted Prego to move, and that they wanted Prego to stick around, but they couldn't, I guess they couldn't agree to terms. You know, on whatever that was going to cost. And there are still, obviously, there are still locally owned restaurants in Rice Village. El Maison is still doing their paella. Navy Blue, Hamsa, Badalena Bakery, have all been successful. Rice Box is there now. D'Amico's is still there. So it's not like it's completely lost its local character. But I think you're right. I think the kind of what people are looking for has changed. A restaurant with a menu that maybe isn't keeping up with the trends and time. Like, it's a tricky balance when you have a legacy restaurant like that, because you want to keep serving the dishes that people love and that they come to you for, but you also have to be honest about, your decor and their presentation and everything else. And yeah, stay in the mix. So Prego, I talked to the operating partner of Prego. He didn't want to get into the specifics about kind of why they made this decision. So, but they do have their fans. And it does seem like it's definitely a loss for the neighborhood not to have this place. And in terms of Rice Village, like, we'll see what they do, right? Like, they could choose to bring in more local operators, or they could keep reaching out to these national tenants, and we'll just see how that shakes out, right? Like, there's a part of me that thinks, like, oh, if they, if Prego comes out and North comes in, there may be a certain segment of the population that's really excited about that.
Now, I'm just gonna speak out. No hate to North, but if y'all replace Prego with a North, I'm looking now. Come on now, Riceville. Like, I'm looking upside the head a little bit. I'm sorry. Now, come on now. That y'all not gonna do that.
All right. Well, we don't know. Like, that's just me. That's just the
I know you were
one
just
off the
making,
top of my head example. I don't think that's what's happening, but we do know that there are these groups from out of town that have their eye on that area, and there will be more announcements about regional and national tenants coming to Rice Village, I'm sure. All right. Let's move on to topic number the very rare topic number four. And Felice, I'm only doing this because you're on the show. But we got to talk about what's going on at Kraft Burger and Katy. They are hosting the Sonic the Hedgehog Speed Cafe pop-up for 3 months. It was invented by Andy Nguyen, who is one of the co-founders of Trill Burgers. Obviously, the menu has chili dogs, onion rings, drinks inspired by the world of Sonic the Hedgehog. It's decorated like with graphics from Sonic the Hedgehog. And the reason that we're talking about this is because it's in Katy, it's Kraft Burger. You're a huge fan of
Yep.
Shannon Toon, the chef and owner of Kraft Burger. So I'm just gonna let you go and then we're gonna wrap this up. But just what do you think about this for Shannon and for Katy to be hosting the Sonic the Hedgehog Speed Cafe?
I think it's wonderful, great cash grab for the Toons. Great, everybody loves Sonic the Hedgehog, so I've seen the pictures. They invited me out. I'm like, I'm a grown ass woman with no kids. So thank y'all. I tried to find to see if any of my friends' kids were available that wanted to go, because I would have taken them. Other than that, my nerves are a little bad. So I'm like, yeah, it's gonna be a hard pass for me. However, I did tell all my friends in Katy this is coming. They're over the moon excited because summer is coming and it has Katy written all over it. Like, I think they're going to do well. I think they're in a great location.
Right, close to the
So,
freeway, plenty of parking,
plenty,
easy peasy.
people gonna go, they're gonna lose their mind. The kids are gonna, yeah. So I was like, will I have a chance to go in there? Now, if I have a kids' day, like, aunt and fee day, I will throw the kids in there. Step outside and let them go wild, because again, it's I can only see in my mind, I'm picturing it, and it's just gonna be mayhem, chili dogs, kids just going wild. Like, I think it's great. But yeah, it's a good thing. I think it's wonderful. Very smart. Yeah, smart Andy. Yeah, that's all I got. I won't be going in there doing any. If y'all see footage for me, y'all know it's going to be a kid in tow.
All right. I think that is a good place to
All
wrap this up. I'm going to say that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurant of the week. Stick around. Police, for our restaurant of the week, I want to talk to you about MF Lobster and Ceviche. This is the new restaurant in the Autry Park mixed use development, which is where Annabelle Brasserie is. It's where Auden is. As the name implies, it comes from the same team behind MF Sushi, Chris Kinjo, and one of his longtime chefs. And in fact, when we went, Chris Kinjo was there, kind of working the dining room, checking in on the kitchen. So it was nice to see Chris. It had been a long time. It's a funny sort of restaurant, right? Because it's a little bit like it's a little bit like the Simply Pho of seafood restaurants. It's like when you go to a restaurant called MF Lobster and Ceviche, you're going to order lobster and you're going to order ceviche. And the menu is pretty
Correct.
small. It has lobster, it has ceviche, it has crudo, it has like 10 different lobster dishes, it has a couple of pastas, and that's really it. There's
That's
not a whole lot on that menu,
it.
but I don't know. I like that focus. I don't know. Talk to me about what you thought about MF Lobster and Ceviche.
I'm with you. I love getting lost in the big menu. Don't get me wrong, but I love a very focused. It was very focused, right? Lobster and ceviche. So I knew, and I knew it was going to be focused. But when you give me a focused menu, my expectations go that much higher too, right? Like, if you're calling it lobster and ceviche, listen, there is no room for error, because that means you do that shit well. Like, that's the shit that you do. So when I order that, I expect no errors. And hey, and MF Sushi, they always deliver. So I didn't expect anything less, and they delivered on the lobster and the ceviche. The restaurant is gorgeous. It's beautiful, aesthetically pleasing in every way. I thought it was a really nice vibe. It's kind of loud in there, and it wasn't loud because It was loud with so many people. It was full, but I don't know what made you. We were talking, and our waiter was hard time hearing. So I don't know if it's a good first date place. And then when I say loud, don't take it in a bad way, right? Like it was just kind of hard. I wouldn't go there on a first date. But other than that, the food, everything that we had a good choice from all over the menu, and we'll kind of go into some of those dishes. I wasn't disappointed.
You know, I it's funny. You said it was loud. I had no trouble hearing you, right? I think our waiter was just like kind
You
of
said it was a waiter?
soft-spoken. I think it was the waiter. He was very nice. He was very friendly, but he also, I think, yeah, just struggled to communicate a little bit. So we had a ceviche and a crudo. We had a tuna crudo and a yellowtail ceviche, both of which we liked. And then of course you have to get lobster. So we did it right. I think we had a traditional kind of warm lobster roll, like a what they call a Connecticut style roll with butter. We had their brown butter lobster bao. We had clams. We had the clam pasta, the spaghetti vongola, and then we had some raw oysters.
Oysters
They
to
had
weigh.
they had dressed oysters in from France that we took advantage of. So, and then we each had a couple of cocktails. So, a lot to like about this menu. And the thing about lobster rolls in Houston is that they tend to be that people, chefs, restaurants, they tend to make two mistakes, right? They try to add stuff to the lobster roll. Like a lobster roll doesn't need celery or chives or lettuce or any of that stuff. It should just basically be lobster and a toasted, buttery brioche style bun. And then the other thing they tend to do is they tend to overcook the lobster so that it gets chewy. And the nice thing about the MF lobster roll, just the regular one, not the, is that the lobster was really well cooked. It had a great texture, and it didn't have a bunch of extra crap in it. It was just like buttery lobster in that bun. And it was the same thing for that brown butter lobster bao, right? The bao bun is kind of this, soft and squishy platform. And then you could taste the brown butter. I mean, I could have maybe used a little more brown butter, like kind of amp up the sweetness of the lobster even a little more. But again, the lobster was so nicely cooked that we absolutely devoured it.
Yeah, it
And
was
then,
good.
and I'm a huge fan of spaghetti with clams, right? That's one of my that's a comfort food
That's
thing
one
for
of your
me.
dish. That's one of Eric's
That is one of
favorites.
my favorite things to eat. And we ate it at Clark's, and we've eaten it at Navy Blue, and we've eaten it. I order it everywhere. This version is one of the best, I think, in Houston. One of the, and I was just like, the clams were nicely cooked, the pasta was spot on, just everything about it. That is a dish, and it had a ton of clams. It had a ton of clams. It had a ton of clam flavor. I'd go back just for that.
Yep,
What about
and
you? What were
it's a nice night out. It's not the spendy. If we think about, she sits right there with all the other seafood restaurants that we've rated. So far as price wise, she sits right there at the top. Actually, she sits there at the top because I started thinking about where she sits. She sits a little bit higher than she sits up there with Little. She's a little bit
Right.
higher than Clark.
Right. I'll put it to you simply, right? We spent about $300 on dinner for two at MF Lobster and Ceviche, which is roughly the same amount of money that we spent when we went to Little's Oyster Bar and when we went to Clark's and when we went to Navy Blue. Now, we also went to Balboa Surf Club. That's a little less expensive, but also not quite as like fine dining, right? It's not, it's
Correct.
not, it, they're, it's not trying to be in that. It's not trying to play in the quite the same sandbox.
Right.
So, Little's Oyster Bar, Navy Blue, Clark's, MF Lobster, and Ceviche. Where do they slot?
Now, if I take, where we had the lobster roll, and I know if we're not even going to talk about taste and things like that. Clark's lobster, you get the lobster roll and you get some fries, right? And that's like, baby, you getting this lobster roll and you getting this lobster roll. That's how you get, right? So again, MF is up there a little bit higher. That's why I said you You coming out when I looked at everything we had and all the different places, MF, it's like this is what you're getting. So I'm going to put, let's see. Okay, first quality wise, a food with yeses. Yes, MF is gonna sit higher than Clark's. If I think about it like that, MF is gonna take the lead over Clark. I have to put over Clark's now.
Yeah, no. I think the thing is, if what you want more than anything is lobster, like I don't care about fish, I don't care about shrimp, I don't care about if you want lobster, you're going to MF Lobster. I'm hands down over any of them. And if you want a lobster roll specifically, as much as I like the lobster roll on the lunch menu at Navy Blue, give me the one at MF Lobster. Yeah, I think the specialization has benefited them. If what you want is lobster, you're going to MF Lobster. If you want the other things are more of a more diverse experience, like a more complete raw bar or any of that stuff, like yes, Littles and Navy Blue especially are there for you. But if you want lobster, you're going to MF Lobster.
But the beauty is that we're having this conversation, and we've talked about this for years, pre any of these opening, that we needed these options. So I'm glad that we're here today. We've been doing this for a year as all these places opened, that we've gotten to actually try it and even be able to rank them. This brings my heart so much joy. I love it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we have benefited from all of these. Like, all of these are good restaurants. All of them are worth eating at. All of them have their strengths. And it's really just about what
There's no
suits
losers.
your
No
craving,
losers.
your occasion, the size of your group, when you want to go, where you want to be. All of those factors come to play. None of them are not worth eating at.
Right. They're all winners.
Absolutely. All right, anything else on MF Lobster and Ceviche?
Go. Add it to your list. Add it to the rotation. You have to have an opinion. You have to join the conversation.
Well said. All right. Felice Sloan, thank you very much.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you so much for listening. That's it for today's show. Join me on Thursday when my guest will be Brock Wagner from St. Arnold.